D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by the Athletics NHL Draft Analyst, Scott Wheeler. Scott, glad to have you back on the program as the NHL Draft kicks off on Friday. Yesterday, you unveiled your final mock draft of the 2025 season, and you have the Predators taking Porter Martone, the 6'3", 208-pound winger, who had 98 points, including 37 goals in 57 games for Brampton of the Ontario League last season. What more can you tell us about the Predators' interest in Martone throughout the draft process and why you feel he is their guy at that spot?
Yeah, it's been a name that I've heard a lot sort of late in the process. I know that the Predators were around Brampton and their new arena in Brampton, well, old new arena, but their relocated arena in Brampton after the move from Mississauga slightly down the street to relocate the Steelheads for his draft year this year. I know they were in the building a lot. I know they have expressed a lot of interest in Porter over the course of the season. And you watch enough of Porter and you can see why he would be a natural fit for a team like the Predators, who are dying for a premium top of the lineup forward prospect, really one that they haven't ever had in the history of the organization, with all due respect to Philip Forsberg and David Legmond and some of the forwards that they've picked high. The true premium pieces that have come through Nashville have been Roman Josi and Seth Jones and Shea Weber and sort of on the blue line. And now is an opportunity, drafting as high as they are, which has also been a rarity for them as an organization over the years, drafting as high as they are, now is an opportunity to add a sort of truly, truly high-end player. There are a few there that I think they would consider. I think they should and will consider James Higgins out of Boston College. James is a high-end, high-skill centerman who would project potentially to be a first-line center for them someday, and certainly should be a top-six player for them someday if they were to take him at number five. But I've kept coming back, despite the quote-unquote perceived need within the Predators organization for a centerman, I kept coming back to Martone. I kept hearing Martone. He would add a little bit more size to their group. They do have some depth at the center ice position that's coming. Yegor Surin was their first round pick a year ago. Everybody was introduced to Fyodor Svechkov this year with the NHL roster a little bit. So they do have some young players coming down the middle. Obviously they have sort of good depth on the wing as well, whether that's James Higgins' Boston College teammate, Teddy Stiga, or Matthew Wood, who everybody has been introduced to now a little bit. But they've got good depth within the pool, good depth within the organization. There should be waves of young talent on the way, Tanner Molendijk on the blue line, et cetera. But Martone would give them their top prospect, and it wouldn't even be close, frankly. And I'm a big, big believer in Tanner Molendijk, but just a true cut above that. So would James Higgins, for that matter. But Martone is the name that I've heard linked to them more often than Higgins in the last few weeks here.
So let's stick with James Higgins for a moment, Scott, because yesterday we shared your mock draft on the air and we received a lot of reaction about how Predators fans, they want a center. And you said that the Predators, there's a perceived need at center. How wide is the gap between Porter Martone and James Higgins? I know you and some of your colleagues at The Athletic did a big board today. I know they don't necessarily play the same position. But overall, how wide is the gap in your mind between Porter Martone and James Higgins in terms of their overall talent and their NHL prospects?
In my mind, it's very close. I have James Higgins third on my list and Porter Martone fourth on my list. So they're back to back. They're both grouped within the same tier. I am, after having just said that I expect that it's more likely that they'll take Porter Martone, I actually have James Higgins a little bit higher. I would advocate, if I were sitting at that draft table, for James Higgins as the selection. But I can understand the arguments either way. Higgins is smaller. He's listed at 5'10 and a half. He's probably going to play at about 190 pounds. He's now up into the 180s after playing most of the last 3 years in the 170s. So he's added some weight. I know that's been a focus for him. Still plans to add another 5 or 8 pounds before he gets to his NHL playing weight. Going to be a competitive sort of well-rounded player, despite the fact that his game is sort of tilt towards offense and skill and playmaking and his skating and his hockey IQ, which all get among the highest grades in the draft. I do think he's an underrated competitor, a sort of better, more competitive player than he got credit for from some scouts who saw him play at times against bigger opposition this year, and he did struggle against some bigger opposition in college hockey over the course of this season. But the case for Martone is a simple one. It's that he's bigger. He's more physically sort of developed. You run into Porter Martone around the rink, and he looks like he could step into an NHL dressing room tomorrow from a physical standpoint. Obviously, Hockey Canada recognized that when they had Porter be a part of the Men's World Championships this year. Porter doesn't have the dynamic skating that a player like James Haggins has. One of the sort of criticisms or knock, if you will, on Porter Martone is sort of his pace of play, that he doesn't play with quite the same pace that some of the other top forward prospects, Haggins included in this draft class, can play with. Teams over the course of this season wanted to see him be more consistent from shift to shift and night to night in terms of his own competitiveness. Though I don't think that's an issue. Porter is a very competitive kid. He's worn the C for different teams over the course of the years. He's dropped the gloves in the OHL. He finishes his checks. It's more about just keeping his feet moving and being more involved on a consistent basis for Porter. Both of them project as first-line players in the NHL. I think if Haggins is to stick at center, he may end up as more of a 2C on a contending team than a true 1C on a contending team. But when I think about James Haggins, I think about Logan Cooley of the Utah Mammoth. And Logan Cooley is obviously a first-line player for the Utah Mammoth and had a 70-plus point season for the Utah Mammoth a year ago and is one of the bright young players in the world. So I think you look at James Haggins and you look at a player who's on a similar path to that, that can become a top of the lineup center, maybe isn't the 100-point guy that every team wants, but has the skill level and the craft and the creativity and the hockey sense and the skating to project into a point per game top of the lineup player. Now, on the flip side, I think Porter Martone also has that just as a winger and in a much different mold, frankly, as a player. So it'll come down to preference. It'll come down to what the Preds feel about their organization in terms of the size of their pool and whether they might view James Haggins as a little bit too small for the complexion of their team. And then there was another name that I'll add to the list that I heard after my mock draft dropped yesterday, and that's Brady Martin's name. And Brady is really in that mix from 4 to 7, an ultra competitor who would fit with Zachary LaRue and some of the other players that the Predators have drafted and brought into the organization in recent years. But Martin maybe doesn't have the high-end skill or the high-end point production projectability that a player like Porter Martone or James Haggins has. But what Brady Martin does have is sort of the motor that never stops, the most physical player in the draft, the most competitive player in the draft, the fiercest competitor in the draft. Use whatever cliche you want. That's sort of Brady Martin's identity.
Talking to Scott Wheeler. And Scott, we put a lot of stock in your mock drafts. And I'm really curious, as you adjust, because it's changed a little bit. I can remember reading one you did while the season was still going on, then sort of one in between where we last had you on. And there's little tweaks. I'm curious, is it more you trying to drill down on what you think teams are looking at? What has you shuffling your lineup a little bit at this stage?
Well, there are sort of touch points over the course of May and June where there are natural points to engage with teams and sort of source new information. There are natural points to engage with agents. So I always sort of do three mocks, and I do them at three of the exact same timestamps in the calendar, if you will, each year. So I do one coming out of the draft lottery when there's a natural point to text some sources and text whether it's coaches of these players in terms of asking them which teams they've heard from the most over the course of the season, or general managers of these players at the junior level, or their agents, though you have to take agents with the requisite grain of salt, or even NHL scouts and sort of what they've heard about the teams around them. The natural points for that are coming immediately out of the draft lottery. Obviously the combine in Buffalo, which I attend every year and is a sort of gold mine for, if you will, for reconnecting with some people. And then obviously the last one, which is the week sort of right leading into the draft, which is when this most recent mock sort of dropped. So I'll hear different things over the course of that period. I'll have agents giving me shouts about their guys. I'll have sort of come back and forth with scouts for my scout survey that I do, and all sorts of things that sort of produce the information that I'm looking for. And then it's about putting the conflicting things I've heard sort of in a web, if you will, and trying to navigate who I trust and where I think things will go. And then also considering what I know about each prospect pool's needs and each scouting department's preferences and all of that. So a complicated web. I was really, really proud of my mock draft a year ago for 2024. And I think I've got a really good handle on this year's, but it's always a game of who can you trust and sort of weighing different things against each other. And in this draft class in particular, I mentioned this in my mock draft, but there are 8 players that everybody tells me aren't going to get past the top 7 teams in terms of 6 Philadelphia and 7 Boston. I keep hearing that there are 3 different guys that those 2 teams won't let sort of slide past them, and yet one of them has to, right? So
right.
It's also sort of piecing that together. This draft very much is a draft class that has emerged with a consensus 8 players at the top, and yet there are 7 teams that I think are interested in various ways in those 8 players.
Scott, Barry Trotz did a press conference yesterday and also did a one-on-one interview with our station, and he did some talking about Roger McQueen. He talked about him as sort of a wild card. I noticed you have him 10th, but Barry Trotz was obviously very intrigued with him, and he laid out all the things you have about the injury and everything like that, but the upside seems to be very high with him.
Yeah, had McQueen been healthy, 2 very good hockey names that I've got mixed up there, Roger McQueen and Porter Martone. How about that for an NHL hockey player? But no, McQueen has been a source of fascination throughout this process. He originally hurt his back over a year and a half ago, 2 winters ago. There were 3 different stints that he came back and sort of the back issues lingered. And he had mentioned to a reporter about a year and a half ago that it was a herniated disc. And then he says now that that was misdiagnosed and that it's actually less serious than that. And herniated discs get people's backs up because of the way that they can linger over the course of their careers. And the many NHL players that have dealt with them and really battled back issues over the course of their careers. And then you get to the finish line, and ultimately he's now back skating. He participated in a testing at the combine, which was important for him to showcase that he was there physically. And you've got to make that calculation for each organization as to, okay, this kid coming into the draft year, had he been healthy, was probably a top 5, top 6 pick in the class. And where's our comfort level? Is it at 6, 7, 8? Is it at 9, 10, 11? I think that's the decision that a lot of those teams in that sort of 5 to 10 range are having to grapple with. If you were to get to the Pittsburgh Penguins, who now have back-to-back picks at 11 and 12, I would fully expect that that's the floor for McQueen, that he doesn't sort of slip past the Penguins, who I know have expressed interest in Roger this year. But I expect him to go in front of that. I think the Anaheim Ducks at 10 would strongly consider him and could bring some of that risk into the fold, given the strength of their established sort of young core and prospect pool. I think the Seattle Kraken at number 8, the Sabres at number 9 are all teams that could and will strongly consider McQueen. I'm less convinced, I should say, that he'll break into that sort of top 7 group that I talked about. When I hear about those 8 names that aren't going to get outside of the top 7 picks, he's not one of those 8 names. And I think those 8 names will go in front, are more likely to go in front of Roger than they are to go behind him. But I think he's very much in the mix at 8, 9, 10, 11.
All right, real quick, do you think we're having Vern Fiddler on our show tomorrow? We would love the story of Vern's son, Blake, who I think was born in Nashville, if I'm not mistaken,
yep,
going to the Preds. Any shot there?
Not out of the question. They obviously have 2 picks in the 20s, and that's Blake's range. He's going to be a 20s pick in this draft. They also sort of could use a player of his profile. I talked about Tanner Molendijk off the top. He's the opposite handedness of Tanner Molendijk, so you immediately wonder whether, hey, this WHL kid and this other WHL kid, both great skaters, both opposite-handedness. Could they maybe someday be a second pairing for you, right? And they're also very different players, despite being plus-level skaters. Molendijk is a much smaller player. Molendijk's about 5'11", 6 feet, and an elite skater. Blake Fidler is 6'4", 6'5", and a very good skater. Molendijk plays a much busier, aggressive game in terms of transporting pucks all over the ice and using his mobility to jump up into the play and playing tight gaps. Blake plays a more passive game, has less offense in his game, and you immediately start to wonder, okay, maybe these two kids could complement each other. Maybe Blake could be a good complement to a player like Molendijk someday. So I'd be surprised if Blake's not in that mix for them. Would not be the least bit surprised if they pick him, whether it's at 22 or at 26 with either of those selections. I think Blake belongs right there in that range. Blake is never going to be a power play quarterback in the NHL, I don't think. The criticism of him, or one of the sort of areas of development for him from NHL scouts that you constantly hear about, is just his puck play. He can be a little stilted with the puck. He doesn't have a ton of natural offense, but he's 6'5", and he can skate, and he's got a good head on his shoulders, and he's by all accounts a great kid. And I did a feature on him at The Athletic this year and could see that in some of the reporting that I did about him as well. And he just projects to have a very long career. And really, the game is trending in the direction of players like Blake Fidler, who are just sort of steady, reliable, lengthy, mobile defenders. That's the way that the St. Louis Blues were built when they won their Stanley Cup. It's the way the Tampa Bay Lightning were built when they won their Stanley Cup. It's the way the Vegas Golden Knights were built when they won their Stanley Cup. That premium of size and skating goes a long way in the NHL today. And he's got that, even if he's maybe never going to have a 40 or 50 point season as a sort of first round pick defenseman.
Scott Wheeler, The Athletic's NHL draft analyst, joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Scott, thank you so much for your time. I know this is a busy week for you. Enjoy the festivities, and we will catch up soon.
Cheers, fellas. Can't wait to get down to LA tomorrow.
Scott Wheeler joining us on the program. A lot to react to there, and we will do so coming up next at 615-737-1025. Your reaction as well on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. This week's Nashville's best deal is Red's Hot Chicken. Red's Hot Chicken on West End is bringing the heat. Don't miss their hot chicken and waffles or the mac and cheese crunch wrap. Grab a $30 gift card now for only $15 while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals.